Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
7:13 now on this Thursday morning. It'll be a nicer day today than it was yesterday. Less of a chance for rain. Tomorrow is going to be a steady rain all day long. Then as we get into the Mother's Day weekend, you're talking about a 50-50 shot at showers, and it's going to be hot and humid as it is every Mother's Day weekend. What is a screwworm? Are they as bad as they sound? I think they are. Christine Navarre joins us now, an extension veterinarian with the LSU Ag Center. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Tell me about screwworms. What in the heck is that?
Yeah, so the primary screwworm that we're also concerned about is a special case because it's basically a maggot. So it's a fly that lays eggs in wounds. But in this case, it doesn't need like decaying flesh. So an infected wound or something like that, it can lay eggs in just normal tissue. And so, and then it can, once those eggs hatch into the larva can actually burrow into normal tissue, which is very, very, you know, it can be deadly. So it's not here, but it has been slowly marching up from Central America. It's now in very southern Mexico. And so we definitely need to be on the lookout for this pest.
Is this a new species of worm or something? Or did we at one point have these things under control and then stop and they're coming back? Take me through that.
Yeah. So we actually had them in the U.S. Back. It was eradicated from the U.S. in the 60s. And then it was slowly beat back. And then they've been trying to keep it basically a barrier around the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. But it escaped that barrier and has been slowly marching up. In 2016, there were some cases in Key Deer in the Keys, the Florida Keys, and there was a release of the sterile flies. That's how you control it, and that was controlled. But we don't want to take the chance of it getting in this country.
Wait, release of sterile flies.
Yeah, so if you release sterile male flies, then the females can't, they'll breed with those flies and they can't lay eggs. And so that's how you basically eradicate it or, take it out of an area.
So you don't use poison or insecticide, you sterilize the males?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you sterilize the flies. And, I mean, you do use insecticide, so we've got cattle that, and other livestock that come across the border in from Mexico into the U.S. at USDA inspection stations, and they're inspected, but they're actually treated a few times with insecticides before they're, and then again after they're across the border, just to make sure. But you don't really want to rely on that. You want to make sure that you try to eliminate the population of those flies.
So this starts with a fly, is how it starts, or is
yep.
or the worm, or how does it take me through the life cycle of this?
Yeah, so just like, you know, we get, you know, maggots in our garbage can mm-hmm. or maggots, you know, in a wound of an animal or even people, it starts with a fly, and those flies lay eggs, and then the maggots, they hatch into the little larva, which we call maggots, and so these are, the only difference in these is that they're very aggressive and will burrow into normal tissue.
So what animals are at risk from these things?
Every mammal. And so livestock, pets, it's rare in people, but it can occur in people. wildlife. So we, you know, are concerned about wildlife potentially coming across the border, especially if it gets further north into Mexico. So, you know, anyone traveling to an area that would have this, you know, just take general precautions on, you know, personal hygiene. Make sure that if you bring a pet in from another country, you know, you're going to have to follow some regulations from USDA on importing those animals. And those are all there for not just for the screw worm, but for other diseases that we don't want to bring in.
So the fly bites a healthy animal, or there has to be some kind of diseased tissue?
No, in this case, why it's so bad is it doesn't need diseased tissue. So it can, so they don't really bite. They just they deposit their eggs in moist tissue. So they can deposit their eggs in, you know, like the, your eyes where there's, you know, in livestock, you know, where there's, tear film in the eyes, in the umbilicus of baby, calves, you know, any open, moist area, these flies can deposit the eggs. And then if they hatch, then, you know, again, and they're not found immediately, they can burrow into normal tissue.
So how did we keep a barrier against these things in Central America?
So there's, yeah, so there's a sterile fly facility in Panama, in Central America. And the idea was if we could keep them below that area, then, you know, they can't march their way north, but they somehow escape that. And, you know, once they're out there, it's very difficult. You know, if one animal, you know, one fly can deposit thousands of eggs. And so, and then if those are allowed to hatch, then you have more flies. And so it's just, it kind of grows exponentially. So that's why it's such a concern, is we really want to help Mexico. So USDA and Mexico have a joint agreement, because if we help Mexico get rid of it, then that helps us never have it again.
Let me take a break here, because I got a lot of questions, and I'm gonna stop coming to work, doctor, because it seems like every time I come to work, I find out something new. If it's not bird flu, it's something else. Now I'm hearing about screw worms, which I'm looking at pictures of this thing here, and Lord Almighty, you don't want that to happen.
We don't want it to happen.
No, how do we have the resources? We'll talk about this when we come back. The resources that we need to prevent this from happening, and is this a national effort or a state by state effort? And holy moly, I'm looking at a picture of a deer with a screw worm infection, and it's like the size of a hubcap where the worms are eating the deer. And it's, I don't mean to talk about this at the breakfast hour, but it is something that. And we'll talk about the economic effects as well if we don't get this under control. When we come back, we're talking about screw worms with Dr. Christine Navarre, extension veterinarian with the LSU Ag Center. Let's take a look at traffic now, WWL. All right, 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Christine Navarre, extension veterinarian with the LSU Ag Center, about screw worms that, man, just when you thought it was safe. I'm going to tell you what, doctor. So let's talk about getting ahead of this, because it seems like it's a lot harder to get rid of than it is to prevent in the first place, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's why the sterile fly release is so important, because that does have the potential to eradicate it. And so we've got to stay on top of that. And again, USDA and Mexico have a joint venture to do just that.
So is everybody getting along when it comes to this? And is the funding there? And do the necessary people realize how important this is and how you can't let it get out of hand?
Yes, I can tell you that the necessary people, so Secretary of Ag Rollins has been very involved in this issue, and they, you know, yeah, Mexico understands the seriousness of this as much as we do. And so, you know, funding is always an issue for everything. And so we've got to get the funding there. But, we're working on it. And I think we just want people, because it's such a serious issue, and we want people just to be aware of it. And when you're, you know, we don't share a border with Mexico, but it has, you know, it's come into the Keys. We didn't know how it got there. Mm-hmm. So we just want people to be diligent. And if they see something, say something.
But it comes through flies, right? So I don't know how you keep that.
It can come in flies, but it can also come with animal importations. And, okay. You know, we can control the animals as much as possible, but we need to, you know, wildlife is a potential source that could come across. You know, they go back and forth. They don't really understand the borders. So that's a potential that it could come across in wildlife, too.
So is there any kind of, like, when it comes to protecting the food supply, is there any kind of vaccine that you give cattle for this or not?
No, there's no vaccine, and it's really not a food safety problem other than, you know, if it would get in the U.S., it would have a devastating effect on our potentially on our cattle population. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, we might have less food and more expensive food. That's why if you look at the economic impact, it's huge. And so it might be huge to prevent it, but it's a fraction of the cost of trying to deal with it from an economic standpoint.
So once a mammal gets these things, can you treat the mammal? I guess for a human being, is there treatment available?
Yeah. So there's common insecticides that, you know, are approved that are used for other things every day. That so it is treatable. Yes, you just have to catch it very early.
And in an animal, you would treat it or you would destroy the animal?
It would depend. I mean, if you find an animal that is obviously, you know, in dire circumstances, mm-hmm. and not going to live, then you can euthanize that animal. But there, it's very treatable. It's just that it's very difficult to recognize before it gets really bad because they're just very aggressive.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about this?
I'm at about a 5. You know, we've got things in place to take this back, but you never want to let your guard down. So.
Yeah, I wanted to hear 2, but that's okay.
That's our job.
Yeah, I wanted to hear 2, but you're being honest. That's all right. Thank you, Dr. Christine Navar, Extension Veterinarian with the LSU Ag Center. Just when you thought you'd heard it all, screw worms coming in from Central America, maybe. And how do you treat them? You sterilize the males. 7:30, we'll talk with Colin Arnold when we come back about the city and hurricane preparedness week and the rain and so forth. Right now we pause for WWL First News. A heavy rainfall May 3rd, May 8th, a lot of different May dates. Colin Arnold joins us now, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans, to talk about it. How you doing, Colin? Colin Arnold. Colin, you got us on mute?
Hey, sorry about that.
That's
hey,
right.
Good morning, Tommy.
No,
sometimes I feel like slamming the phone like that.
Hey, you're probably talking bad about me. That's why you put it on mute, but I don't blame you. Hey, let's talk about the rain and what's coming tomorrow and next week and so forth. How did everything perform yesterday?
I think pretty good. You know, obviously we had some straight line winds. There's no indication of, you know, any tornado activity, but straight line winds came through. Some reports 50 to 60 miles an hour, and we had some tree damage in Orleans, and we saw that also in neighboring parishes as well. So those are being addressed right now. I'd recommend any homeowner or anybody that sees tree damage in the city can call 311 and have Parson Parkways come in and address it as necessary. But the rain itself, you know, we had some areas of street flooding around the city. Not uncommon when, you know, we got about 3, almost 4 inches of rain in some areas of the city within about between, say, 10 a.m. and about noon. And so not uncommon, but from everything I saw, no pump or power issues. And they were able, you know, to draw that water down within, you know, a few hours of the afternoon, and, you know, as per their procedure. So I'm always hesitant to say, but I will say I think we saw the worst of it yesterday. Today is going to be drier. And then tomorrow, you know, there may be a hit or miss shower this afternoon in the area. But other than that, I think tomorrow is going to be another day. I don't think it will be like yesterday, but in particular in the afternoon from about noon to about 5, looking at some potential for some thunderstorms and another line coming through. And then Saturday and Sunday, there's also kind of a lesser elevated chance of that type of rain in the afternoon, too. I think we're in this cycle where, you know, every 4 to 5 days we're going to get, you know, at least some sort of pop up or, small front moving through the area. And we're going to be getting our spring rain.
Do you know if any cars flooded yesterday? I don't think water got in any houses in Orleans Parish, did it?
No, nothing to that extent. I mean, obviously there are some ground level residences and businesses in areas that what we call severe repetitive flood properties that, you know, we've been working over the years to try and elevate through programs with the federal government. Those are kind of on hold right now, but we're hoping to get those back. And nothing notable about house residence flooding or vehicle flooding.
When you talk about it, and I see what happened in Marrero with the straight line winds and the rain, and as I ask you this as the director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness, something like that, there's nothing you can do. That's just the luck of the draw, right? Whether it happens in Marrero, that could have very easily have happened in the CBD yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. It all depends. And same with the rain, quite frankly. I mean, some areas on the West Bank these last 2 weeks that we've had rain have been getting a lot more. It seems like the flow either goes kind of north to the North Shore or a little south of the city, which, you know, is really luck of the draw. It's always tough when you're dealing with, when the Weather Service is covering an area from Baton Rouge to the Mississippi counties, you know, it's a huge area, and really it is kind of luck of the draw on who is going to get it. And a lot of times they'll tell you very clearly, like, we're very confident that there's going to be a bad weather day tomorrow, but we're not as confident on the flow and which communities in themselves are going to be impacted the most.
I know what I deal with just a couple of oak trees on a property, and I can't imagine how you guys go about keeping the catch basins clear. Because, again, when I went through it with Steve Nelson the other day, you know, where you got to, the water's got to get, it rains and it goes from the street, it's got to get into the drain and then go underground through the system into the canal, and it gets pumped out. And then the pumping station, of course, has the power and the pumps and so forth. But I don't know how y'all stay on top of the oak leaves. Do you have confidence that the water, that the drains are clear enough for the water to drain through with all the oak leaves and everything else in the city?
I do. There's something to the order of 17 or 18,000 storm drains in the city, mm-hmm. or maybe even more. And so keeping a regular maintenance cycle on those is something that, you know, Steve and I have talked about, and you know, what that looks like. And I think more investment needs to be made into that, because what happens is, you know, we'll get an event like this, and then that brings down a lot of leaves from the trees with these winds. And then the trucks have to go out and start knocking out 311 calls and immediate issues that they know exist after a storm. And then that puts them potentially further behind with just the preventive side of going out and trying to touch every one of these storm drains in the city. You know, it's a daunting task.
Let me take a break.
That's why we ask for the public to help as much as we can. We're not asking people to strain themselves. We're not asking people to, dig down inside or in any way open up these storm drains and try and clean them. We're really just asking for, when you see debris, when you see leaves and things like that covering the grate, to help us out with that and pick it up if they can with a rake or a broom, just something to clear those out to make sure that at least the grates are clean.
And a quick word about lawn companies, because I get texts about this constantly, blowing the clippings into the drain.
Yeah. I mean, anything you're putting in there that shouldn't go in there, and that's, you know, everything from leaves to sand. One of the issues with doing sandbags during hurricane season is they typically tend to get left out. The bag wears away, and then the sand ends up in the storm drains. And then the other things, crawfish water, motor oil, everything else that can potentially get in there. People cleaning out their garbage cans and dumping the water down the storm drain. Those are the things that, you know, we really ask the public, please do not do, because it does affect that system.
Now let's talk about, when we come back, the maintenance of cleaning the drains out and so forth, and how confident are you heading in a hurricane season. We're talking to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. Before you know it, This will be hurricane season. I hate to tell you that. Today is May 8th, 752, 8 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 7:58, 2 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans, about the rain yesterday and what's forecast for tomorrow, about catch basins. Colin, somebody texted in, if you take the cover off of a catch basin, the pit is massive, meant to hold huge amounts of leaves and dirt with no impact on drainage. The design is very good. The entire system is designed to be self-scouring like your toilet and house pipes. Does that make any sense to you?
I don't know if the entire pit is meant for debris, but you know, I think it's meant to hold a certain amount of water. I don't know enough about it to say, but I will say that I got a text from Steve Nelson while we were on break saying, hey, what are you doing? There's 72,000 catch basins, which I knew when I said 17. Mm-hmm. As soon as I said it, I was thinking of the fire hydrants, which is a whole other project we're working on right now since the fires in L.A. And making sure that we're addressing every fire hydrant in the city as well. So it's a never-ending kind of cycle of trying to maintain a very large system in a city.
But quickly, so, going back to the cars and everything that they pulled out of the drainage system and so forth and the canals and all of that stuff, that maintenance is ongoing, so you're confident that everything will work properly as we had in a hurricane season?
And I think that pumping down the canals before these type of events when we have a notice is a huge help because it gives that water somewhere to go and at least collect in the meantime until we can get it pumped out to the lake or pumped to the river, depending on where the system is, and then it really does help. And so I know that they are very much, when they have the ability within a day or two to get those pumps, canals,
Thank you, Colin.
Down.
Gotcha.